It attracts 1 million visitors a year. It's loved by locals and it's regarded as the premier subtropical botanical gardens in Australia. We're talking about Brisbane Botanic Gardens, Mount Cutha. This year is the 50th anniversary of its opening in 1976. And what better way to celebrate this golden jubilee than by talking to people who know and love the Mount Cutha Gardens. I'm Helen Jeremy and I'm a friend of the Brisbane Botanic Gardens and Sherwood Arboretum. The Friends' objectives are to connect, promote and protect the gardens. We're proud to be bringing you this series of podcasts celebrating Mount Cutha Gardens. We want to thank the Brisbane Lord Mayor's Community Fund, Councillor Greg Adaman and Brisbane City Council Libraries for their invaluable support in helping us bring these podcasts to you. In this first episode, I'm going to be talking to Dale Arvidsson. Dale lives and breathes botanic gardens. He had the privilege of being the curator of the Mount Cutha Gardens from 2015 to 2025, and his enthusiasm for botanic gardens is infectious. We're going to find out from Dale about why botanic gardens are so important and the highlights of his time at Mount Cutha Gardens. Welcome, Dale.
Good day. It's a wonderful opportunity to be able to speak about botanic gardens because, as you know, I love botanical gardens, and the time that I spent at Brisbane Botanic Gardens, Mount Cutha, were some of the most formative and some of the most enjoyable times that I've had working and very privileged to be working in botanical gardens.
Oh, Dale, I've walked around the Mount Cutha Gardens a few times with you when the curator has taken the friends around, and you are absolutely passionate not only about the plants, but also about the concept of botanic gardens. Where did your passion for plants come from?
It's a very long story, but an unusual one for many people who are involved in plants. I just seem to gravitate towards plants and being out in the garden and growing plants from a very, very young age. But it was my grandmother who really encouraged me. I grew up in central Queensland, and so the idea of gardens was very much, you know, palm trees and poincianas and tropical vegetation. And it was a bit of an interesting thing, reading books from our local library or watching television programs. And back then the Australian content wasn't that high. And so I used to see plants that were from much cooler temperate climates. My grandmother helped me out with that by the very first things she ever gave me were some bulbs and some seeds of things like hyacinths, which grew amazingly considering I was in central Queensland, but then also encouraged me by giving me my very first seeds to ever grow, which was actually cacti seeds. Seeing that those tiny little microscopic seeds turn into the tiniest, cutest little baby cacti and watching them grow, it just had me hooked, not just for being outside and being in the garden, which many people do enjoy, but growing plants, understanding about plants, researching plants, and discovering just in so many ways how plants are so important for our everyday life.
Oh, you've reminded me about when I first planted a seed, which was a lychee seed. And yes, the thrill of when it comes up when you're a child is amazing. So when you were
It is such an amazing thing to have that knowledge that this little inanimate object that you just place in the soil, suddenly life comes from it. It's one of those incredible things that people need to do more often to ensure that children are connected with nature and understand where much of their food, the air that they breathe, many of the materials that they enjoy around the house all come from that very first element of planting that seed.
Yes. So you had the beauty of having plants in your life early. Did you think that, when I grow up, I want to work with plants?
I certainly did. It's sometimes that difficult thing where your hobby can't possibly be your work. You've got to put on a suit, put on a hat, drive your car into a city and work in an office. But I knew it was something that I was very interested in doing, and I had a range of subjects. When I was at primary school, of course, gardening wasn't something to do, but I was very fortunate that on speaking with our headmaster at the time and our teachers that I managed to do a bit of practical hands-on work working with the group, what was called a groundsman back then, but basically was the gentleman who looked after all of the green space around our school, which was pretty amazing just to see that. But then when I went to high school and I made sure that agriculture, which was really the only subject back then that you could have as part of your studies that had anything to do with plants, I knew I didn't want to become a farmer, but at least allowed me to grow plants. But when I went to our what was called a guidance officer back then and said, this is what I want to do. I want to do something with plants and gardening. And I do remember my guidance officer words very, very clearly. And he said, that's not a job. That's something that older guys do when they finish working in forestry. They go and work for council. What else can you do? And I was pretty naive back then. And when someone who I looked up to as an expert with careers says, well, that's not a job that you can do. And remember, I grew up in regional Queensland where there wasn't the opportunities presented to you, say, if you grew up in a capital city where back in the 70s, horticulture was a very interesting and very well-researched and well-supported career choice. In regional Queensland, it wasn't understood as such. You either were a farmer or you got another job. And so for many, many years, I then just treated gardening as my hobby. So I went to university, studied a Bachelor of Visual Arts, worked in tourism, worked in graphic design. And it was only when the brand new Mackay Regional Botanic Gardens opened up in 2003, almost 20 years of doing other things for my career, that I achieved working there as a visitor services officer. And that was there about, talking to school kids, talking to the general public. My tourism background really helped with that. And when I arrived there, within 6 months, I went, this is it. Working at botanical gardens is just exactly what I want to do, because even I didn't really know what a botanic gardens was. I thought it was just a beautiful park where they had events and maybe a couple of museums and lovely plants. But it was only working at Mackay that I realized through working with the staff there and working with our curator that botanic gardens have so many different elements to offer our communities and very, very important roles to do that I had no idea about. And from 2003 onwards, I've been hooked and just absolutely love and continue to work at botanic gardens.
I know what you mean when you say there's so many different uses for a garden, because when we all visit a botanic gardens, we might be going there for something slightly different to somebody else. You might want to be in nature, you might want to admire the plants, you might want to have a great cheap family day out, or get ideas for your own garden perhaps. But a garden is so much more than that, isn't it? What are the purposes of a botanic gardens that visitors might not be aware of?
And all those things that you mentioned are important, because botanical gardens need to have a relevance for the wider community. I hate to say it, but there are some people out there in our community that don't really get plants. They're not gardeners, but they might be into history or they might be into entertainment. And botanic gardens need to offer a wide range of activities and interests in order to be something for everybody, because botanical gardens in Australia are funded by us. They're either funded by city councils or funded by state or federal governments. And so they need to make sure that they have a relevance for the wider community. But botanical gardens are far more than that. If you look back through history, botanical gardens were very much about acclimatisation gardens in Australia. They were often growing the food that would either become the sustenance for the new communities that were developing for all the immigrants that were coming over, often to completely different climates, completely different soils, and trying to grow those same foods that they were used to growing in often much cooler climates, right through to becoming the economic crops for those new communities and new countries and states to export and send overseas to bring finance into those communities, through to today, some very, very important roles like conserving threatened species and being an integral integration between our modern day understanding of plants, and in many cases, 40 to 50,000 years of continuous linkages with the use and the importance of our native plants to the custodians of the land that we live in today. Botanical gardens are there for education. They are there to learn, and as well as being there to a places that are beautiful, that look great in your photograph, or to be a wonderful backdrop to a wedding or an event or an important family gathering. They can be so many different things to so many different people, but those roles that are often behind the scenes, like conserving our threatened plants that may be faced with extinction in the wild, or introducing plants into new areas where the climate might be changing and the plants that used to be able to grow in that area 100 years ago are not growing so successfully now, to becoming beautiful places that inspire us to make sure that our streets and our suburbs are beautiful places that we can all live in and enjoy through either the street trees growing in that suburb or the front garden of the people that live there.
It's interesting you're talking about how plants could change with how the climate's changing. I recall walking through the African section of the Mount Kutha Gardens with you on a friend's walk, and you were talking about how those plants could really be the plants of the future for Brisbane one day.
Very much so. Brisbane's climate, along with the rest of Australia and the rest of the world, is different to what it used to be when our first European settlers came over. Now, whatever the cause of that is, I won't talk about that today, why that's happening, but I think virtually everyone will say that the climate is different. Certainly in Brisbane, it's perhaps a bit warmer than it used to be. It's certainly not as cold as it used to be. I know that in the annals of the City Botanic Gardens, that it does talk about how there used to be frosts that were a common cause of death of plants in the City Botanic Gardens. And I don't think you'll actually see that occurring anymore in the City Botanic Gardens. The chance of frost being anywhere in the CBD would be quite an unusual thing today. And our climate seems to be a little bit more sporadic when it comes to when the rainfall is coming. Perhaps we're seeing a longer, hotter, drier spring and summer, or even a later time when the heat might be coming in. And the fact that the heat may be staying longer, I've certainly noticed similar plants growing at both Brisbane Botanic Gardens, Mount Kutha, at the City Botanic Gardens, and even at Sherwood Arboretum, our third botanic garden in Brisbane, sometimes all dropping their leaves at certain times that might be different to each other, or flowering at slightly different times. We're really seeing that our climate that we used to have is changing, than what we were used to. Maybe it's part of much larger cycles that we've only been here a couple of hundred years with our modern day sciences to see that. And maybe it's part of a much bigger picture, but certainly scientifically, the climate is different to what it was 200 years ago. And as such, we have to look to the climate that can support those plants that Brisbane wasn't. And there are parts of the world and around those subtropical areas where we've always managed to grow plants. And we've also managed to grow plants in Brisbane that were cool climate plants or even arid plants. And we need to look at those places where perhaps it's that little bit warmer, or perhaps we have a naturally longer, drier period during the winter, spring and early summer. And so plants from from the African continent, plants from drier parts of the Americas, and even drier and warmer parts of Asia, but not just those external countries, plants from Australia that may be more typical of central Queensland or even north Queensland or up into the Northern Territory or the far northwest of Western Australia could actually be more suited to this slightly changing climate that will give us the plants. When you look around Brisbane today, many of our popular street trees aren't from Brisbane. They are naturally occurring in the rainforests of central and north Queensland. And some of them come from different places overseas as well too. there's always been that interest in trialing different plants from different climates, because as gardeners, we always want to grow something that we see in a book or that we see on television that we don't see around us. But that's where botanical gardens, with their amazing collections of plants from around the world, can really be the inspiration to see that, now, maybe this could be the street tree of Brisbane up on our dry, rocky hills in the future. Or maybe that these plants might be better growing in the coastal sandy environments where the water tables might be at a lower level or more saltwater intrusion or just stronger, windier days being experienced with drier periods in between. Maybe they are the plants that we should be looking at for the future. I think it's always good to explore, and that's what botanic gardens do better than anyone else, is by growing so many different plants from around the world and around Australia, they often have that knowledge about what plants can take it a bit drier, can take it a bit shadier, and might be the choices that we'll be looking at in future in Brisbane.
Well, we can certainly see that sort of range of plants at Mount Coober Gardens, and it's always amazing to walk through and just see how many different things from different places in the world are thriving. Now, you arrived at the gardens in 2015. What were your first impressions when you walked into the Mount Coober Gardens?
My first impression was I was actually blown away by the gardens. I visited just a handful of times in the past, and our botanical garden in Mackay that I was at primarily before that was had a really big focus on the flora of the Central Queensland Coast bioregion. It had some smaller exotic collections, but it was primarily plants from Central Queensland. But primarily it was a brand new garden. It only opened in 2003. And when I left that garden, it was a very, very young garden. To walk into Mount Coober just blew my mind. Here we have undoubtedly one of the best and most diverse botanical collections of any botanic garden anywhere in Australia, and I would hazard to say anywhere in the world, where you have 56 hectares of densely planted, richly sourced plants collected from botanical gardens from all around the world, and a huge collection of Australian native plants. Over two-thirds of the Mount Coober site is devoted to growing Australian flora, which most people don't get to see because they get so overwhelmed with the plants all planted at the front, which seem to be mainly from plants from around the world. To seeing a garden that was, 40 years old and was already, not fully established but was growing. After my 10 years there, I think I barely scratched the surface of understanding and knowing about the plants in the living collection. And that was my primary role, being Mary's curator of those gardens, was to manage those plant communities and to understand and tell the stories about those plants. It is truly a magnificent collection, and it's a very beautiful garden as well too. So I felt immediately incredibly privileged and not a little bit daunted commencing there in 2015.
As a curator, when you arrive at a gardens, which is, as you say, was established 40 years old, and you come for your tenure, how do you create the vision for what you're going to do with an established garden?
I think it's incredibly important to understand what's gone on in the past. We have a history of a number of very influential people in horticulture in Brisbane that were involved in the development and in the delivery of the botanic gardens, from Barry Dangerfield, who most people haven't heard of, in the very early days of those gardens, right through to Ross McKinnon and his incredible tenure of over 40 years of horticulture in Brisbane, and the depth of knowledge and the development of those gardens, both the city gardens and also the Brisbane Botanic Gardens Mount Coober, back then called the Mount Coober Botanic Gardens. The first thing that you can do is talk to those people that you can talk to that are still around. I was very fortunate to be able to have some great conversations with Ross just to understand the development of the gardens and where that came from, and what was the driving forces behind why the plants are that were there. Second, at Brisbane Botanic Gardens Mount Coot-tha, we have and still have staff members that are there, which have been working there their entire lives. There are people there who have been sourcing and growing those gardens for their entire career. To touch base with them and to understand the growing conditions of the plants, you can dream up any collection. And unlike other curators at other institutions, which you might be a curator at a museum or curator in an art gallery, when you're working in a known environment, you know, the air conditioning's on, you know it's always going to be this temperature, you've got a finite amount of walls, you don't have to worry about weather, storms, drought, irrigation breakdowns, all those elements of running a garden. It means that it's an absolute challenge sometimes to understand that these plants that you might want to grow here, they've been tried before and maybe they won't grow there. Or those plants may have grown in those gardens 30 years ago, but due to increasing shade, root competition, and those subtleties of changing climate means that those plants that maybe wouldn't have grown there 30 years ago could now grow in those particular elements. Researching is the most critical factor, understanding what's gone on before, and then developing a direction forward and working with in Brisbane City Council to develop a contemporary master plan for the gardens, commenced in 2015 and then was delivered in 2018, allowed us to say, these are the elements that we need to look for. These are the collections that we need to focus on. And these are some of the basic elements of the site that we need to continue to enhance. By having a framework such as a master plan allows a curator to work within a framework that's supported by the staff at council, our councillors, and the Lord Mayor's vision to be able to say this is supported and we support where the direction that these gardens are going in. The gardens is not a standalone element. In the old days, you know, in the 1800s, gardens put up big high fences and the curator or director of those gardens pretty much had to say what was going on. These days, you know, publicly funded, gardens need to find that balance between ensuring that the general public get a wonderful experience whilst those key elements of developing collections and supporting critically important collections, especially rare and threatened plants, is such an element. And I was very, very privileged also, commencing in 2015, to be there right at the beginning of the opening of what's now called the Queensland Conservation Collection, that 4-hectare expansion of the gardens that focus solely on growing Queensland plants and many of those plants that are threatened with extinction in the wild in Queensland, really is a set the gardens up to being a very contemporary and very important element in the conservation of plants in the state of Queensland.
Certainly as a visitor, I can see how the planning for that Queensland conservation area has really succeeded. At the beginning, it's hard to see when there's the new hard infrastructure about what is it going to be like. But I've really noticed in the last year or two that the trees have grown, everything's sort of so much more green and populated, and now I'm really getting the vision that was there, and I can really appreciate the planning which has gone into it. It's a long-term game, isn't it?
I was very fortunate in my time in Mackay to arrive at a garden that was literally just a couple of months old. And you could literally see from end to end because the majority of the site had been planted up with tube stock. So the hard elements, the hard infrastructure, the paths, the bridges, the waterfalls were all very much stark and in strong contrast to what was basically miles and miles of mulched garden beds with very small plants in it. I was very fortunate to work with the Mackay Gardens landscape architect, Laurie Smith, and Laurie's vision for that gardens wasn't apparent at the very beginning because it was also young. Leaving that gardens after 12 years and seeing the plants that had grown, I could see the avenues, could understand the vistas, understand that by standing at this particular point, you could then look to that particular point and be drawn in that direction. None of that was apparent to me at the very beginning. And that's the amazing role of people who have worked with botanical gardens or landscape architects, is to have that future vision. These days, watching television, there are so many garden shows where we get the instant effect. You know, you buy in mature trees, instant landscaping. And you get the instant effect. That's wonderful for it. But most people can't afford to do that. The other element, of course, to garden design that Mount Coota embodies so well is it was very much atypical of that design of the late 1960s, early 1970s, which was very much about fill the site with plants. Now's the time at Mount Coota where the garden has reached a certain maturity. And sometimes it's not about adding new plants, but it can be about subtracting the plants. These are plants that have been put in the early days as more of a 10 to 20 year fill. And now's the time to let some of those hero trees and hero plants shine by slightly subtracting to allow the vistas and the views to come out. Any brand new site is an absolute wind tunnel. You often add plants, and this is something I learned from Laurie Smith. Sometimes you have to add plants that have only got a short life on site to allow those longer-term hero plants to grow straight and tall and not be bent over in the wind. So for a garden, sometimes the negative space is as important as the positive space with living plants in it to allow you to lead your eye, but also to focus on what's important in the collection. And to walk through Mount Coota and be completely immersed in collections like the exotic rainforest or the Australian plant communities, it allows you to be transported up to far north Queensland or maybe to somewhere in Africa or in South America. To have that vision that our previous curators and curators in charge did with Mount Coota, and to see that design element is something that takes time. And it's something that I'm still learning myself after being working in botanical gardens for over 20 years to really understand that it's not sometimes what you plant now, but it's that vision of how that will look in future and allowing the space for it could sometimes really make for very, very good garden design at botanical gardens.
One thing I've certainly noticed in the last couple of years when I've been walking around Mount Coota Gardens is when I get glimpses of the tropical dome. And then I think, oh, I get it now, why it's there. And it's quite exciting when you can see it pop up from different angles. And it's a lovely forward planning. And as you say, you don't need large trees to come and take away that vision sometimes.
There was something that was very an important element of the original design of the gardens, which was very much around to lose yourself in the plants. When you see those very early black and white photographs of Mount Coota Gardens, it was pretty much a eucalypt forest. And you could see right through to Toowong Cemetery. You could see out to what's now, of course, the Western Freeway. But back then it wasn't quite such a busy road. You could see up to the houses of Toowong and Mount Coota. It was very, and you could see the quarry right next door as well too. It was very stark and very open. And to have that vision of the tropical dome, which for its time was a significant development for Brisbane, for something that cost hundreds of thousands of dollars for a brand new city, the price of a freeway, to put that into a brand new botanic gardens like Mount Coota, to build a library that was really focused on the botanical collections of books, to also even allow for things that maybe you question why they're there, like the planetarium, but then you realise that it's great to put our scientific institutions together to look inwards at our planet and then to look outwards as well too. All those elements and those built elements really create something that's very unique. There is also something that I learned from Laurie Smith, which is something called a sense of place. Brisbane Botanic Gardens looks like Brisbane. And that's plants from all over the world that have been used in our city. But it's some of those design elements. It's the blue stone that was quarried right next door at the Mount Coota Quarry, which is such a dominant feature of the original and the new elements of the site, it gives you that sense of there are some, you know, modern and for their time and very, very dramatic buildings like the Tropical Dome. But then it's often the subtle elements of those original buildings, and it can be stone walls. It can be the old walls of the toilet blocks up on the mountain, but it can also be some of the modern structures like the Mount Cooper Visitor Information Centre, the Bonsai House, and the Birdwing Vine Shelter that utilises that blue stone that really makes you understand that you're in Brisbane, you're here at these botanic gardens, not somewhere else around the world, even though the plants might be telling you otherwise. And it creates that ultimate subtropical feeling of being in Brisbane with those plants and those design elements. It's those connected elements that give you the idea of what a botanical garden is. And I think Brisbane Botanic Gardens, Mount Cooper, does it exceptionally well.
Dale, you've mentioned so many different areas of the Mount Cooper Gardens in our talking today that excite you and that bring pleasure to so many people. But I'm just wondering, do you have a personal favourite amongst the ones you've mentioned, or is your personal favourite a different place that we don't know about yet?
There are the classic elements, but place is very much defined by time as well too, I find. And so you can be in many parts of the gardens, but it's often the time of day that you are there that makes all the difference. The Japanese garden, of course, is iconic for the gardens. It's one of the most beautiful Japanese gardens of any botanic garden, I think, anywhere in the world. You know, with such strong elements and links to Expo 88, to the designs of Mr. Kenzo Ogata, through to, you know, even the hand of Ross McKinnon in how the garden was devised and developed. And as it's matured, it is incredibly beautiful. But to sit in that garden on a rainy day, when it might be in the middle of summer, everyone's gone and escaped the rain, to sit there in the shelter and look at the rain falling in that garden is a prime element of the design of being in that garden. To go up into the exotic rainforest later in the afternoon when the sun hasn't quite set behind the mountain behind you and the rays of light are peeking through the canopy and creating lit up elements of bark, tree trunks, leaves that you wouldn't normally catch your eye if you're visiting in the morning or visiting in the middle of the day when the sun's right overhead. It's almost like you can see the humidity and the moisture captured in those rays of sun. And suddenly you get to see these unusual and different plants and elements. It might be highlighting a brand new crimson-coloured frond on a palm, or maybe a sparkle of a dewdrop sitting on a leaf after rain or after a cool morning. Or even a flower which might be way up in the top of the canopy, which has fallen to the forest floor and is sitting there on the path and has been lit up by one of those rays of light. It just captures that immersive element of what a rainforest actually is. A place that's very true to my heart is the Bunya Forest. I used to visit the Bunya Mountains every year for around about 12 to 14 years, and that was, you know, a beautiful place, a place where I just felt completely at home. To see the Bunya Forest slowly maturing back in the Australian Plants Community Area and to walk through there and to see the Bunya Pines and the associated plants when the native caper has been engulfed by butterflies of the caper white butterfly, it's an element there that you would normally have to travel 400 or 500 kilometres up to the Bunya Mountains to see. But you can see it right there in Brisbane. To me, that's what makes Mount Cooper Garden so special is you can literally save yourself travelling right around the world just by visiting either a plant like the Welwitschia in the cactus house, in the cactus, you know, through to visiting one of these other elements by standing in the middle of the African forest and seeing, you know, in that African collection and seeing one of the Adansonias that you would normally have to go to Madagascar to see in the wild. That's, to me, what's most special. I love all of the gardens. I love every single part of it. It's that time of day to be walking around the gardens. I encourage people to visit late in the afternoon or go really early in the morning when the gardens have just opened up, rather than just when most people are around. But to really appreciate just how wonderful that garden is for Brisbane, that it really brings the world to Brisbane by seeing these plants, it's such a joy to be able to see all of that. And I think that's the element of it. It's absolute diversity of collection that really sets up what makes Mount Cooper so special for me.
Dale, I think you've reminded us all that we need to take some time when we're in the gardens and think about where the plants are from. Look carefully, feel the light, and just take time to enjoy it. And it's been a pleasure talking to you and getting your insights about the garden and having you open up our eyes about the sorts of things we can look through and see. Dale Arvidsson, thank you for joining us with our podcast about Mount Cooper Gardens.
Thanks, Helen.
When I next visit the Botanic Gardens at Mount Cooper, I'm certainly going to hope it's raining so I can sit in the Japanese garden, or I'm going to be looking for the light coming through the canopy of the exotic rainforest. And I'm sure Dale has inspired you to do that too. You can find out more about the Friends of Brisbane Botanic Gardens, Sherwood Arboretum, on our website, and follow our Facebook and Instagram pages. Join us next time when we speak to another enthusiast who knows and loves Mount Cooper Gardens as the Friends continue to celebrate the 50th anniversary of Brisbane Botanic Gardens, Mount Cooper.